State officer in need.
What's up, guys? It's Matt from the 1078 Project. Hey, if new to the organization, a little bit about us. The 1078 Project is a nonprofit organization that's been founded and developed by law enforcement officers who've been involved in critical incidents and officer-involved shootings. Our goal at the 1078 Project is to provide mental, spiritual, and practical support to law enforcement officers as they navigate the difficult times surrounding an officer-involved shooting. With that being said, let's dive into today's episode, and I'll see you on the other side, boys. What's up, guys? Welcome back to the 1078 Project podcast. Today's guest is one of my best friends. He's a police officer, former soldier, deployed several times, recently retired from the Army Reserves. He is a team leader on the SWAT team. He's been a SWAT operator for an extraordinary amount of time. Was a canine handler for a short period of time and was the victim of a house fire. He's one of my best friends, been a giant mentor in my life, has guided me both professionally, spiritually, and as a dad and a husband. I'm excited for you guys to get to know him. Today's guest is Montana Stevenson. All right, what's up, man?
Nothing.
What's up with you?
No, same as you, just sitting
really,
here.
Yeah, it's really weird. I was just randomly walking in the parking lot, like, hey, let's come up here and let's do a podcast.
Yeah. No, dude, this is like something I'm really excited about, this one. I really am, because I think I called you like, I don't know, 2 weeks ago from that canine course, and it's like a 45-minute conversation. I think we touched like everything that matters to me in my life, yeah, between like my family, law enforcement, police tactics, our faith, how to be a good dad, all of the things, balance in life. We covered like everything that 1078 is based on, and so much of that information that you've given me throughout the years. And I think at the end of it, I was like, bro, you got to come on the podcast. Because
I think it was actually 54 minutes.
Was it?
Yeah, no.
It was a long time.
That was a great
dude.
Conversation.
It was a long time. But yeah, it was one of those things, dude. It's like, you know, as we were having that conversation, it dawned on me why I wanted you to come on here. It's like, you've given me in my own personal life, like, so I've had like mentors in my professional life. I've had like guys, like, as far as law enforcement goes, they've given me insight and helped me throughout my career. And I've had guys on like in my personal life that I've turned to that have helped me. And I've had guys in my like faith journey that have helped me, but very few people cover all three of those things. Like, very few guys that I know are, can give me tactical advice, can give me advice on how to be a good dad or how to be a good husband, and also how to be a good Christian. And you're like one of the only dudes that can do that. And that conversation was like it was like the catalyst for all of it. Everything was, we were talking forever, but we covered every single one of those topics. And the reason why I want you on here is because you have played such a giant role in my life in general, that it would be unfair for me to just take all of that and not be willing to give it to other people. So,
dude,
I'd like for you to, I'm super excited, because if people can take a quarter of the information that you've given me throughout our time as friends, and you being my mentor, I think we can definitely help the law enforcement world move in the right direction. Wow. So,
well, thank you. That was, completely transparent, honest, that was very humbling. I don't think of myself as that impactful, but
you are, dude.
I really, man, that's the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me.
Yeah. Well, dude, I'm not blowing smoke, man. There's not too many people that, you know, I've met good cops. I've met very good cops, you know, and I've met good dads. I haven't met that many good cops that are good dads that are good husbands. You know what I mean? And my goal and the goal of 1078 is for that to be the norm. You know what I mean? And I think the way that we make that happen is we give that information to younger cops so they don't have to make the same mistakes,
yeah,
and fall short like I did and like so many other dudes in law enforcement, and put their family second or put their faith second, or go to work when they're not, you know, in the right state of mind or whatever the case may be. But I really do feel like that's the way that we kind of change the dynamic of law enforcement, is to get good, healthy police officers out there. And I think the information and the things that you've experienced through your life and the information that you've given me can help push that in the right direction. So,
yeah, I'm honored to be here, man. As you're talking, I'm just thinking about basically the overall theme is, you said it kind of in the intro, was balance and faith. Like, yeah, that's it. You know, if I can expand on that a little bit later, but yeah, that's what it starts with for sure.
Yeah, I think so too. Let's before we dive into too deep of stuff, let's, my goal with this is for this to be kind of like your autobiography, and for people to get to know you as a person and where Montana came from before we get to police officer, dad, SWAT operator, team leader,
yeah,
firearms instructor, asymmetrics guy, and all of the other 9,000 hats that you wear. So let's dive into where you grew up.
Oh, shoot. So believe it or not, I've never been to the state of Montana. I was named after a street sign in Ohio. Hmm? Yeah. So my parents did not conceive me on that street. Oh. Just, I want to make that clear. This sorry.
That's exactly where my mind jumped to.
I know. Sorry, Mom and Dad. This is out in the public now, so don't, you're old. It's kind of gross, but sorry about that comment, too. I'll probably say that a lot over the next hour or two.
It's all right, dude. We have editing power for whatever.
Right, right. So, yeah, my yeah, shoot. I guess to tell you about myself, I'd have to tell you about my parents. My parents are amazing people. First and foremost, like, my jovial personality that I get, that I see the light in everything, at least I try to, it comes from my mom. My mom is known, like, throughout my life as a happy crier, right?
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, she's I mean, she got made fun of my whole childhood for being a happy crier, and she has passed that on to her namesake, my 10-year-old daughter, Sadie Faye. My mom's name is Faye. Sadie Faye is a, we don't call her Sadie Faye all the time, but I don't know why I did, but Sadie is a very happy crier. So she reminds me a lot of my mom. It's ironic that they're a lot alike, which is scary at the same time. But no, I mean, I'll get into that a little bit. And then my dad is my hero. You know, have you ever seen the Tom Brady thing about little boy asked Tom Brady, he's on stage, and he says, "Who's your hero?" And he gets emotional and he goes, "My dad." And that's exactly how I feel every time I think about my life, and where I've come from and everything like that. My dad is one of those dudes that whenever you say, as a father, what do you want to deliver to your kids? And you want them to walk in your footsteps. That's what Jesus wants, right?
Yeah.
And so if I had to say, like, he's one of the most godly men I've ever known, and I got to spend my whole life with him, so it was kind of cool. But a little background there, he was a farmer in Ohio when I was born. Really? Yep. He and they actually got saved. They gave their life to Jesus right around, I guess, the same time I was born. So both my mom and dad were, they met, got married relatively quickly. They knew each other in high school. My dad's sister was my mom's best friend, Aunt Holly. Shout out. So, and my dad's a few years older than my mom, and my mom always thought my dad was, like, cute in high school, you know. So my dad has a thing about having his back scratched. So my dad would lay a big one on her after she scratched his back. This is going back a few years, you know. That was like third base in 1964 or whatever it was. I don't know. Yeah, excuse me. They parted ways. My dad went to Vietnam and became a Green Beret. Later found out, this is kind of all within the last few years, he kind of, because of the Jocko Willink podcast and all those things, found out that he was a MACV SOG Green Beret.
What does that mean?
So a MACV SOG Green Beret was like the original Delta Force. It was before Delta Force was a thing, and that's where they got their birth, right? And so whenever they went over to Vietnam, they took the Green Berets or back then Navy SEALs or whatever, and basically they'd volunteer. And the whole thing was like, hey, if you volunteer for this, you're probably going to die.
Really?
Like, that's how they had the highest casualty rate of any unit in the war.
Really?
Yeah. And so they're required to do 6 months, right? So they did a 6-month stint. And so I found out this because my dad said, he called me one day a few years ago and he goes, hey, I know you're into leadership books and everything like that. I came across an old email from my team leader in Vietnam. His name is Dick Thompson. And he wrote a book called The Stress Effect. I was like, oh, that's really cool. And so I Googled Dick Thompson, found out that he was on 3 of Jocko's podcasts.
No way.
Yeah. So I told my dad about it before I listened to him. I said, hey, Dad, your old team leader is on Jocko's podcast. I was like, I've been listening to Jocko for years. Matter of fact.
Dude, shout out Jocko. I'm going to tag him in all this.
Yeah, tag Jocko. Yeah. He responded on one of my tweets one time. I was like, what? I screenshotted
it. Did you save it?
Yeah, I did. He liked my tweet. No, what do you call it now? X'd? You like my X'd?
I don't know, dude. I just keep calling it Twitter, dude.
Hashtag.
I don't understand why it changed.
Yeah. Anywho. Yeah. So my dad is the most humble person in the world. The only time I've ever heard him really make fun of somebody is when we were at Lowe's and one of the workers. Came up to us and like, hey, can we help you with something? And he's like, yeah, I'm looking for this. And he goes, it's kitty corner to that. And I walk away and I'm like, kitty corner? He goes, you know, he had a comment about kitty corner. But it's the only thing, like, I've never heard him make fun of anybody. Like, granted, we listened to Rush Limbaugh a lot when I was growing up. So maybe some things were said then.
Yeah.
But other than that, you know, he's just an all-around awesome dude who's very godly and that sort of thing. So I say that humility. So about a month goes by and he calls me and he goes, hey, have you listened to the podcast yet? It's not like my dad to bug me about something. I said, no, I'll get around to it. And he said, so I don't know. Another few days goes by. We talk about something else. He's like, hey, have you listened to the podcast yet? I'm like, no, I haven't. And so I was like, you know, this is weird. I'm going to listen to this like throughout work and whenever I drive. So I turn it on. The first episode is all about Dick's life, much like we're doing right now with Jocko. He tells about his childhood and he brings him up. And then the second episode, he starts to get into his missions that he was at in Vietnam. I was like, okay. I say, you know, maybe I'll recognize one of these because my dad told me like 2 stories. That's it, growing up.
Really?
One was very recognizable, like where he went in. They were looking for a missing unit or something like that. And they're basically, it was 12 on hundreds, if not 1,000
really?
Bad guys in another country, not even in Vietnam. It was in, I believe, Cambodia or Laos, one of the two.
Really?
And that was the cool thing about MacVSog is they did some of their stuff in North Vietnam, but a lot of the stuff was, that's why it was top secret until the late 90s. So all of a sudden, Colonel Thompson's telling the story about the same story that my dad told me.
No way.
But in so much more detail. In like so much detail where I'm getting emotional, like, oh my gosh, there's no way that this happened to my dad, right?
Dude.
One of the things was, and this is, sorry for listening, but this is interesting to me.
It's interesting to me, too.
Yeah. One of the things was they had a top secret radio, and they're out and about, and they see the lanterns come over and everything like that. And all of a sudden, this is pitch black. You know, picture the jungle canopy. They describe it, you can't see the hand in front of your face. It's so dark. But they can see through like an opening in the canopy hundreds of lanterns on a trail. And all of a sudden over their top secret radio, like you have to do so many, switch changes and everything like that in sequence for the radio to work is a female voice. And in the background is funeral music. Like, later on, I actually talked to, Dick Thompson on the phone, and he was telling me this in person too. So he said, you know, the funeral music that I gathered around with my grandmother on Sundays, they'd say the obituaries of everybody in town that died. It was the same funeral music playing on this top secret radio. And it said everybody and their unit right there, I think it's like 10 or 12 guys, their obituaries, like their names, their dates of birth, and that day they died.
Who was giving that out?
They didn't know until later that there was somebody at the top in the South Vietnamese. Because the thing about the McPhee SOG is it would be like on a typical mission, it would be like 2 to 4 Americans and then like 4 to 6 indigenous.
So it was like the current special operations.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So they would take out 2 to 3 times more of the like South Vietnamese or Hmongs or other people like that. So it was one of their guys who was a spy at the top of their special forces that had access to all their files. And
dude, that's freaky.
It was freaky. So long story short, they were overrun and they had to call their grid, their digit, their 8-10 digit grid on their physical location to try to take out as many of them as they could. So my dad picked up shrapnel. Dick Thompson tells they dropped a cluster bomb on them, like on their location. And he said, this is God, size of a grapefruit, didn't go off. He picked it up and right next to him. And my dad remembers picking up shrapnel. It was still hot from their own ordnance.
No way.
Yeah, so it was like crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And so I called my dad after I'm hearing this. And it was like the finality of the second episode. I was like, Dad, why didn't you tell me this? And so he left Vietnam under a mortar attack where he suffered what is known now as a TBI. And I remember feeling his scars growing up on his back and everything. So I've heard my dad cry twice in my life.
Those are big shoes to fill, dude.
Yeah, to say the least, for sure. Yeah, so I've heard my dad cry like twice in my life. That was when we found out my mom had stage 3-4 cancer when I was little. And then the first time I left for Iraq. And then I'd never, forgive me, Dad, if I insult your manliness here, but he wasn't full-fledged crying, but I could hear his voice. Mm-hmm. It didn't sound normal. It was just, you know,
yeah, had a crack in his voice.
He had a crack in his voice. He's like, well, I've forgotten a lot since then, you know?
Yeah, dang.
I've since, once again, long story short, over this past Christmas, I reached out to Dick Thompson because he had a book. It's codenamed Dynamite. And I said, hey, I'm Craig Stevenson's son, Montana. I found him on Facebook. And We talked to each other, I think it was on Christmas Eve, and it turns out, actually just this past Sunday on Easter, is he wrote out the volume 2 of his book, which my dad is in, and it should be waiting for me at home, so I haven't read it yet, but so that'd be cool.
No way.
Yeah, so it's super good. The first book was good. I read it in 2 or 3 days, and so
dad had all this experience before you ever had kids, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Obviously, you didn't know the things that he did, but could you ever tell, I guess, is the question I'm asking.
So I would say, and I think he would feel comfortable in saying this, is he had a temper growing up. I remember he's telling a story, you know, he was a hog farmer, and statute of limitations is up on animal abuse. So, but you know, he would probably suffer some PTSD moments where he'd take it out on some hogs and where they'd really tick him off. I remember my mom telling me a story about how one of the cows got out and she went to go wake him up and he almost choked her. He did choke her, you know, but it was not him, you know, he was startled And this was shortly after Vietnam, right?
Yeah.
But I have never seen that because he equates that to finding Christ.
Really?
And, yeah, yeah. So.
Because those guys got zero resources.
Zero resources.
Like none.
Matter of fact, I reintroduced him to the, he's been getting disability for all these years, but.
Did you see he got blown up?
Yeah, yeah. That's another cool story.
We got as much time as you're willing to give, so you can tell whatever story you'd like.
No. you want to call it divine intervention or just God? He was playing poker with some friends in a tent. He was expected to leave that day. Matter of fact, a helicopter was on its way to pick him up when they got mortared.
Really?
Had that helicopter not been en route to pick him up, he'd have been dead.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. He recalled, I just found this out the other day too, over Christmas, was the last thing he remembers was saying, "I'm cold," before he passed out.
No way.
From shock. Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah. So it's really, this book from Dick Thompson and the podcast has really brought out some old stories. And yeah, so it's really been cool to hear.
It's cool to see you guys connect over, you know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. That's for awesome. Sure. Yeah, he's my hero. Yeah. So that dives into Jesus and Christ is the it's the cornerstone of my childhood too. That's what my parents brought us to the household. After some weird things happened after they got saved, and this is progressing into moving to Missouri. Mm-hmm. I was, I don't know, one or two. But some weird things happened, like the day they got baptized in a river close by to their farmhouse in Oxford, Ohio, there was a hailstorm. So drive down to my parents' drive. It's about a mile to their house. Only my parents' crops got damaged from the hailstorm. Not the crops on the other side of the drive.
Really?
For that mile. So those crops destroyed, right? Some good things that happened. The hog market in the early 80s crashed. There's people slaughtering their hogs because they couldn't afford to even keep them alive.
Really?
They couldn't afford to take them to the market. I mean, there was no money for the hogs in the early 80s. But with that being said, they had to sell everything. They went bankrupt, but they were able to use their cattle sale. They had one of the biggest cattle sales in the nation for a small farm. At that time, they made about $100,000, which back in the early days is a lot of money. They were able to pay off their feed debt for the pigs, which is around $90,000+.
Really?
So that was a blessing. So then the faith that they gathered from those experiences. My dad felt called to come to Springfield, Missouri, to attend the Assembly of God Theological Seminary there. Yeah, so when we grew up, I've listened to several of the podcasts, and I think I have a similar story to, like, we didn't have any money, you know? Yeah. That's like a common theme, I think, with a bunch of people. My dad came, and he was a full-time student. I believe he's a full-time student. He may have been part-time. But anywho, he ended up getting his master's in pastoral counseling and something else, I think. But during that time, he worked at the church as a janitor. He did construction. That's what his father did, was construction. He worked, just...
That's so wild, though, man. You think about, a guy goes from the premier unit, one of the premier units in the military, to a full-time or part-time student with no money.
Yeah.
It's like, golly, how are we feeling our guys? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's the thing, though, that I think maybe you've said it in the past, too, is looking back, we didn't have – I didn't know.
Yeah.
It was such a great childhood. I didn't know that we didn't have any money.
Yeah. There's things that I didn't even realize when I was little. I didn't realize that, people didn't get their haircuts by their mom. You know what I mean? Like I thought, I didn't know that that was like abnormal. I didn't know that eating Great Northern beans out of the can wasn't abnormal.
Shaving your head is cool, Montana.
Yeah, like I didn't know those things.
I know, Dad.
I was just so like, it was just how I was raised. You know, like it was just normal. You know, like we just did that.
Yeah. So eventually he I don't want to put words in my parents' mouth, but the pastoral thing that ended up not happening, right? So he became a mailman. And he retired as a mailman.
That's a good profession.
Yeah. For real it is. Yeah, yeah. He walked in on an armed robbery one time. You think a former Green Beret would do something? He drops off the mail and does his like, "Hey, how's it going?" and walked right out. He was on the news too.
No way.
Yeah, they interviewed him. That was pretty funny. He was probably like, "Why did you tell that story?" Yeah.
So, how old were you guys when you moved to Springfield? You said you're like,
I was 2.5, okay. I believe. Yeah. 2.5.
Already.
Yeah.
And what did mom do?
The only job I recall her having was a coach at Curves for women.
Oh, yeah.
No, but she was a church secretary back in the day. She worked at the, is it Boys Town? It's like an alternative school back in Springfield.
Yeah.
She worked there.
I've driven past it before.
Yeah. She was the Hallmark card lady for a long time.
And the thing that brought them from, where'd you say, was it Ohio?
Ohio, yeah.
To Springfield or Missouri was that seminary?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
What denomination was it?
Assembly of God.
Assembly of God. Okay.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
Contrary to popular belief, we never saw a snake in church. Okay.
You didn't?
People want to just go all the way over there to this. Oh, it's a Pentecostal. You probably dance with snakes. I was like, no, we never did. I never saw a rattlesnake. Okay. Yeah. It was a great church. I have no qualms about being raised.
So dad moves, you guys move back to Springfield, ends up being a mailman. How was like your elementary school? How was that all for you? How many siblings do you have?
Okay. Yeah. So I have, two brothers and two sisters.
Okay. And where are you in the mix?
I'm the youngest.
Oh, you're the baby.
Yeah. I'm the baby. Yeah.
Okay.
So, my oldest brother, he lives in Florida. I never lived with him. He is actually from my mom's previous marriage. So we're not close. So I've been to Florida a few times and visited him. He's come to Missouri a few times, but yeah, we don't really talk a whole lot. There's nothing wrong with him. We've just never been close.
I'm guessing he's significantly older than you.
Yeah. Yeah. My oldest sister, Sherry, she lives in Branson. She is Missouri's best wedding photographer, according to Missouri Magazine.
Oh, yeah.
3 years running, maybe four, five, I don't know. Sherry, give somebody another chance, will you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hogging all the
goodness. Jeez. Hogging all the goodness of photography. No, she's awesome. She's a lot like my mom. She's finds joy in everything she does. She's known for her.
Seems to be a consistent thing with you guys.
Yeah, well, we try, you know. Yeah. My next oldest sister, Stephanie, God's been in her life. She actually, she just started doing this. It's called the Daily Dig. And it's just a, 30 seconds to 45 minute long devotional where she prays for you.
Oh, that's cool.
And she is... she's a beautiful person, but she's more even beautiful inside. Like, she's just so genuine.
Yeah.
She's awesome. And she has a great testimony. She was actually made the lead role for Les Miserables, which is the Broadway show. And she found out that before the Cosette comes on stage, she would have had to been playing the part of a prostitute, and she wouldn't watch the show when she was hired, and they found out that her role was being groped and touched in the private area and everything like that, and the chest and everything. So she quit. She just quit her dream of Broadway, off Broadway and Broadway. And she went and performed in Branson for 20 years, and now she lives in Arizona, is a active member of the church, and she sells real estate, and she's doing good. My brother, he's a detective down in Republic. He is amazing as well. Like, he is probably one of the most faithful dudes I know. He's got more faith than I know what to do with, yeah. With everything that's going on in his life right now. It's not my story to tell, but he's pretty crazy, like, awesome. I found a lot. I gained a lot of strength from him. We talk consistently about. He has a passion for human trafficking and stuff like that. So he goes, and he's been to Thailand several times. Just had a huge case in Thailand. He's pretty awesome.
He had a huge case. What do you mean? Like, is he connected to some other agency?
He volunteers for a nonprofit.
What's the name of the nonprofit? Do you know?
I'll get back to you.
Okay.
I don't want to say I can look it up. I'll let you know. But he's starting his own nonprofit.
Good for him.
Man,
sorry, buddy.
I'm having a brain fart.
It's real hard. Just so he knows, I apologize.
His name? Benny Stevenson.
He'll look it up for us and tell us.
Yeah. Or Ezekiel Road. Look that up and see if that is. You're going to edit this now?
No. Unless you want us to. No,
who's that guy in the background?
Yeah. No, that's like our young Jamie. It's,
Jamie, look this up.
Yeah. Like the knockoff version of Joe Rogan. Yeah,
I like it.
How did you? What was your connection to Branson? How did
okay?
How did we go there?
I see.
I'm just.
I see where this is going.
I'm asking for a friend, dude.
Yeah. That's funny. My connection to Branson. So I started singing in like eighth grade. My sister, who is an amazing singer, incredible singer. I don't know how it happened, but she heard me singing or something like that, and I could hold a tune. So she's like, Montana, let's sing a song. And the song was Going to the Chapel. I don't want to sing it now because it's embarrassing, but going to the chapel and we're going. Especially, yeah. It's weird because it's singing with your sister. Gonna get married. Yeah, that's weird. But anyway, it was an old song that, you know, we listened to on the radio, and she would harmonize to me as we sang. She goes, oh my gosh, you can really sing. I said, thanks. So I started singing there, you know, and then choir and middle school, high school. So my junior year in high school, there's a couple people in the show that she was in. The show was called The Promise. It was about the life of Christ. Jesus was played by a guy named Randy Brooks. We got a funny story. He'll probably watch this too if I post it on Facebook or something. So please forgive me, Randy. Randy played Jesus like his entire adult life. It seemed like the dude was legit. He really? Looks like the paintings. Like,
really?
Yeah, he's an incredible voice. He's a great Jesus. Sounds weird. She's like, you should go try out for the show I'm in. I was like, what? She's like, yeah, you'll make it. Trust me. I was like, okay. So there I took a leap of faith. I think in June, like it was June, I tried out, and I made it. And so from late June or July to December is when the off season hit. I did two shows a day. Two shows a day, and went to high school full time.
No,
I should say not full time. We were in a 4-block system in high school, so I went to 3 of the blocks and then got an exemption to work. So my day started super early in the morning.
No way.
I think school started at 7:40, 7:50, maybe earlier. I don't know. Then I would get off. I think the first show was it 2 or 3, and the second show was at 8, I believe, 7 or 8. And so I would go to my sister's, and my mom would show up too to babysit. Not every day, but most days. Then we would go to the show, perform one show, and then do the second show. I think it was 6 days a week. I think we got Sundays off or Mondays off. I don't know. I can't remember. That was a long time ago.
You should at least get Sundays off if you're doing a show
about Jesus.
Yeah.
Right? But, I mean, maybe somebody would, I'm going to go to church today. But yeah. To the show. Anywho, You know what? I never had better grades.
Really?
My time management was on point. This is probably the best time management I've ever had. But, yeah. It was, so, yeah.
What was your role?
I played townsperson number 3. No, I'm just kidding. I made that up. Lazarus.
You got brought back?
Every day. Sometimes twice a day, I came back to life.
No way.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty big role, dude.
It was the last scene of Act 1, right before the curtain comes down for intermission. The last thing people saw was this face. Those of you on the podcast, you can't see it, but I smiled.
Really? Dude, that's so crazy. So that's where the whole... That's where the whole singing thing and the Branson thing came in.
Yeah, yeah. So I made the mistake when I was in field training to tell my field training officer that I was in a Branson show. And then, like, before you know it, people I didn't know come up and be like, sing for me. Dance for me. And then I
probably was one of those people. One point or another.
Dance for me, boy. Yeah. That was 6 months-ish, 5 or 6 months. It was a great experience. I don't regret it one bit.
Did you, other than the choir and the shows, did you have any other activities that you were involved in, sports or anything?
Yeah, I did football my freshman year and then baseball. Played a little baseball, yeah. And that was a cool thing about, when I talk about balance in life, it's something that I've inadvertently done my whole life. My sister was an amazing singer. I'm nothing compared to her in my mind as far as singing goes. And then my brother played baseball. He was on the all-district team with Albert Pujols and JUCO, you know?
No way.
Yeah. Like, played against him. Matter of fact, if Mark Burley, you know, the pitcher?
Yeah, pitcher.
Actually talked to him today about my brother. It was a funny conversation. But,
Didn't Mark Burley throw a perfect game?
He did. But okay. The funny thing is, we have a newspaper article from the Poplar Bluff, like, freaking Gazette or something. I don't know what it's called. The Democrat, I don't know, but it's of my brother hitting a game-winning home run off of Mark Burley.
No way.
And so we saved it because Mark Burley's a stud.
Yeah. He's
a Hall of Famer, you know? Yeah. And so I told that to a lieutenant over at county who's related, and he's like, I'm calling him right now. I'm calling you out. So it was funny, like, you talking to Mark Burley, like, do you remember Benny Stevens from Three Rivers? And he goes, nope. I was like, I'll take a picture of the news article. It's my brother's claim to fame on my mom's I Love Me wall.
Yeah.
Like down in Ozark. So
what'd your brother end up doing with baseball? Anything?
No, he ended up going transferring schools, and then he did some odds and end jobs before he finally became a police officer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a stud. So when I say that, he was a way better baseball player than I was.
Yeah.
So I got a little bit of balance from my brother and my sister, and maybe even a little bit of my older sister's personality.
Yeah.
So
you said Jesus was at the forefront of your guys' family. How'd your parents make that happen?
Yeah, so, you know, being an AG church, there's no shortages of services, like two services on Sunday, one on Wednesday.
Oh, really?
Then before the service in the morning, we went to Sunday school, you know, so it was like, I have nothing but good memories from church growing up. We did something called the Royal Rangers, which is like the Christian Boy Scouts. And my dad continued with that, up until, you know, he, stopped doing it a few years ago, but, at one point, my mom worked at the AG headquarters as a secretary. So it was just one of those things where, what's that comedian's name? He's become Nate Brzezinski or whatever.
Brzezinski. It's Kate's favorite comedian.
It's his childhood that he whenever saying, like, sucks, like, that was my house. That was my parents. I remember a church play that they put on. And there was a kid, like, a little bit older than me, that was the lead role, right? And he said, what'd he say? He didn't say sucks. ticked off. That's what he said.
Ooh.
He said ticked off in church. And I'm like, Nate Brzezinski, I'm like, what kind of trash are you bringing me to, Mom? He said ticked off. I didn't even want to say it. I feel bad saying it right now.
That's like the pastor of our church. He always talks about how they couldn't say like replacement curse words.
You couldn't say
like frickin'.
Yeah.
If you said frickin', that's the same word. You're saying just the same word.
That's
you're
using the a replacement. Same word.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember we went to, my mom and I went to Ace Ventura. And it was, you know, think of it. It's like before the internet, you know, the only real trailers you would see on TV, and those are sporadic. But I was like, Mom, will you take me to this movie? Like, kids at school think it's really funny. It's hilarious. We made it 10 minutes.
Your mom had a stroke.
And she's like, I am aghast. She didn't say that, but I can imagine that's that. And we got up and left. I remember being so embarrassed. Like, these people are going to know that we left. And we're like, we're not going to the bathroom. We're going home.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Did you ever feel like, I always struggle with this with my kids because we're at church a lot. Like,
yeah.
We're here like Wednesdays, up at the podcast all the time, like at church on Sundays. Like, I feel like we're always at church for one thing or another. Do you ever feel like church was forced on you?
Oh, of course. Like, and I don't want to say that in a bad way, but it's like as a kid, like you wake up and Sunday morning, I remember despising like
early mornings,
the jovialness in my mom's voice, like saying, let's wake up and go to church, you know, and
yeah.
She would sing this song and
what's the song?
I think she would sing like, this is the day that the Lord had made, that the Lord, have you heard that song?
Yeah.
It's old school.
Yeah, like an old hymn or whatever.
Yeah, there's another one. It's on the tip of my tongue. I had 7 concussions growing up before the age of 14, so the memory's not there all the time.
Yeah, I feel you.
I can't remember all 7. I used to. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. How'd you get all 7? How'd you get 7 concussions? Just all football?
One was football. One was before the game. I was getting everybody pumped up. We're going against our rivals, the Cherokee Indians.
Mm. That wouldn't fly in today's world.
No. Carver Cougars, baby. George Washington Carver. Peanut King.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gang, baby.
Yeah. I don't even, like, how do you go there with a peanut allergy now? You know?
You can't do it.
You can't do it. Anywho, so I was headbutting people, but I didn't have my helmet on, and they did. That set me out for 2 weeks. Yeah, I didn't practice for 2 weeks. That was before, like,
I could head injuries. See that, dude.
That was before head injuries were a big deal, you know?
Yeah.
A sledding accident. One time I was at the eye doctor with my brother, and I wasn't the patient. I was sitting in the waiting room. Yeah. And I was Indian style on the seat, and I was sitting on my hands, and I was just rocking back and forth. And I rocked too far forward, and I didn't have the time to put my hands out in front of me because, like, I think my hands were asleep.
They were stuck.
And whack, knocked me out.
No way.
Yeah, dude. I woke up, and there's ice on my head. I had this big old freaking bruise. Another time was we had a track. They built a track on a hill at my elementary school. Legit hill.
Like a running track?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we
were doing a mile run.
They're really trying to create strong kids.
Yeah. On the back end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not on the front end. They're trying to create fast kids on the front end.
Yeah.
And so it was, all right. And then they said they blew the whistle to start, and my feet got tripped up.
You fell on the hill?
Fell, knocked myself out, hit in the head, woke up, everybody around me.
This is familiar.
Yeah. My last one, at the age of 14, I was at a buddy's birthday party, and that one put me in the hospital where I was horsing around with his dad, who was a black belt and whatever, and he spun me around into a door frame, and I couldn't do anything straight.
Did you get knocked out again?
No, I don't think I lost consciousness at that time. Shout out to Dan. What up, Dan?
Thanks, bro.
I love Dan. So that was a few of them. Sledding accident. Did I say that already? I can't remember.
Yeah, you said sledding accident.
Did I say sledding?
Yeah, you did. Yeah. I'm keeping up.
Okay. Yeah.
I didn't know all this.
Those are my critical incidents. That's why I'm here.
Yeah. High school. Well, how was high school for you?
High school, man. A lot of people were like, I hated high school. I loved high school. Because I'm sure you get the sense, like, I approach every opportunity. That's actually one of my faults, to please people, you know, whether that be like,
I can actually see that
by deeds or just by making people laugh. I don't want anybody around me to feel uncomfortable. And so I used that to my advantage in high school. It was funny. It was like, I never did it to like for popularity or anything. I did it legitimately to make people laugh and have fun. I started groups, like the group poop.
What's that?
This is pretty awesome. So at our main restroom by the office, all the stalls are old school. They didn't have doors, and you could
you're really going back.
You could put your arms up on the center block walls so you could look at each other as you're pooping. And so a group of us, like, we'd leave lunch early. Go have a group poop. I remember when one of the assistant principals walked in one day, and he walked in, and he goes, "What? Oh, are you kidding me right now?" Because nobody pooped in there.
Yeah.
Like, because there's no doors and no walls. And so I was like, I'm going to make a change. This is changing today.
That was just all your preparation for the military. No. Becoming comfortable pooping around other grown men.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so high school was good, man. I loved physical comedy. Like, I'd play bowling on the stairs, like, in between classes. I would roll down the stairs sideways and see how many people I could take out. You know, stuff like that. Excuse me.
How big of a school did you go to? Did you go to a small school?
No, it was about 1,800 students.
Oh, that's big school, right?
Kickapoo, shout out to Chiefs. Fear the Poo.
Join the Poo group.
It's amazing. Like, oh, let's talk about high school for a second. That's where I met my wife. Met her in choir class. She was a track star in high school. I was a sophomore. She was a senior.
That's always reversed. Normally, it's the older male.
Not when you're like this. You know what I'm saying?
When you're built like this. Yeah. I've seen pictures of you in high school. Bro.
I was not a large guy in high school by any means. So it was funny. Kristen actually told her friend, I shall not mention her name. She's like, she sees me in the hallway. I had no idea we've met, you know, cause we're just in choir together, student council together. She said, I'm going to marry that guy someday.
Really?
This is like long before there was any interest at all.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you ever ask her what the attraction was?
This is probably, I mean, it was the whole package, I imagine.
Yeah.
It was long before that. And so just joking around at the age of 15, which is scary because that's how old my freaking daughter is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, dude, that's crazy.
And she's gorgeous and it ticks me off. Anywho, at the age of 15, I was like, get my license. I was just joking around. I was like, hey, girl, when I get my license, I'm taking you out. So I got my license on a Monday. At Friday, I was sitting in varsity baseball. We had a tournament, so I wasn't really planning on being there. So before cell phones, so I found out that I had to play in this tournament. A little bit later than I suspected. So I had my mom call her.
No way.
I was like, hey, tell her I'm going to be a little late. I got this baseball tournament I got to go to first, you know?
No way.
So we end up doing this progressive dinner on our first date where we went to the Matrix. And we're like, that's a horrible first date movie. So we left.
Yeah, that is kind of a bad first date
movie. Yeah, we left a little bit through the movie because I had some other things planned. Not like that, you dirty-minded people. But so we went to like two or three different restaurants, fast food. So we went and got our main course or appetizer somewhere, like McDonald's. And then we went to like Taco Bell for our main course. And then we went to like Dairy Queen or something like that for dessert.
Dude, high class. Dude.
Then I had a Garth Brooks slow song and some other that I burned onto a CD.
Really? Like in the old LimeWire days?
Jamie's laughing over here in the background.
Like the LimeWire days?
Yeah, yeah,
LimeWire. Pirate everybody?
Yeah. That's like probably before LimeWire, yeah. Napster. So we go in the back 40 at Kickapoo. Headlights, slow dancing. And I think that was probably when she's like, all right, fine, I give up. I'm not.
That's kind of cute, actually, for real.
Oh, dude, I can.
It really is.
Yeah. Yeah. So I say that in jest, but.
What kind of car did you drive?
What kind of car? That was a.
Trying to get the full mental picture here.
It might have been a Chevy Cavalier.
Oh, yeah.
I remember it had a flashing brake light. It was extra. That was like a pretty big deal. I don't know. I didn't have a pickup truck at that time. Maybe it was an S10. I don't know. I think it was a Chevy Cavalier. Red.
Oh.
Legit. Yeah, dude. It was newer, too, I think.
And what year was that you guys met?
99.
Really?
No. Yeah, yeah. Yep, 99.
So you were 15 or 16?
When we went on our first date, I was 16.
So you were 16. Just turned 16. 18?
She was 18, yep.
Was she still in school or did she graduate?
Yep, she was in school. Yep, so she went to Mizzou on a track scholarship.
Oh, I didn't even know that, really?
Yeah.
What'd she run?
Hurdles.
Really?
Yeah. She still has 5 records at Kickapoo.
No way.
86 years later.
86 years later. Yeah, she's sweet. I like her a lot.
Yeah, I do too.
She's awesome. Man, so you guys had like the high school sweetheart.
High school sweetheart, yeah. Yep. After, you know, she went to Mizzou, I just told my daughter about this the other day, and she's like, oh my gosh. I kept like a 5x7 picture, one of her senior pictures that I thought was smoking hot. Like she gave me, like, I think she was looking at me whenever she took this picture, but she didn't know it yet.
Yeah.
With her eyes. She got some big eyes.
Some big eyes.
So I kept it. It was framed, too. This picture was framed. I kept that, and I walked around with it everywhere.
No.
Then my senior year.
You, like, Flavor it? Like, put it on a chain? Yeah, yeah.
Like, I would take it to games, and she would have front row seats.
No.
Dude, people thought it was weird. So my senior year, I knew I was going to marry her.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
So she came to church with me about a month in, and she said it was her Christian walk ended up advancing drastically, I think. And I don't know if that's the why behind it, but I think that had a lot to do with it. Because if you use your faith in Christ, I think, I don't think I know, it's harder for bad things to sneak in mm-hmm. if you continue down that path,
yeah.
Right? So I think that's why I knew. I think July 8th, 1999 is the first time I said I love you to her.
I still remember it.
Maybe June. Crap, I think it was June. But it was the 8th of something.
One of those summer months.
Yep. I remember where we were. I knew right away, like, that summer, like, I'm not breaking up with this girl.
Really?
She went to Mizzou. She ended up hurting her foot, some type of stress fracture or something like that. She transferred to where her parents went in Augustana College in the Quad Cities, which was 8 hours away.
Oof.
Right? So we did a long-distance thing for the first 2 years of our relationship. And
really?
Not once, like, was there... I mean, obviously, every couple. It was really weird. Every time we would see each other, we'd get into, like, little arguments right before we saw each other. I think it was just, like, the anticipation of it, you know? Yeah. And it was... I can't even tell you what any of them were about. Mm-hmm. But, like, other than just those few times, it was a great relationship. I wrote her probably hundreds of letters over the course of, like journaling almost. I would journal to her.
Really?
And we kept God as our focus. Like gift each other, like I gifted her, like first real Bible with her name in it. Stuff like that.
What was the feeling from everybody around you? Like all the people around, did they think you were crazy?
That we were nuts.
Like your parents, were they like, hey, calm down?
Yeah, yeah. So like in my senior year of high school, I collected money for an engagement ring from people.
No way.
And the deal was like the largest donator would have like be an usher in the wedding.
No.
He didn't come, but shout out to Dre Dokes.
No way.
Yeah.
How much did you raise?
Like $90.
How much was the engagement ring?
I don't even remember, but it wasn't 90. I put that on credit. Shout out to Kay's Jeweler.
No way. So you're like 18 years old and you bought an engagement ring.
When did we get engaged? I don't remember the exact date. But so it was my freshman year of college.
Okay, so like 18, 19.
Yeah. So we got married. I got married when I was 19.
Really?
Yeah. 20 days after basic training.
No way.
Yeah.
And what were your parents and like your family saying?
I think they knew that it was something special. I really, really? Do, yeah. I did the traditional thing. I went over to ask her parents for her hand in marriage. No, no. Her parents actually lived in O'Fallon.
Oh, okay.
I asked for Kristen's hand in marriage, and her dad said yes, and her mom said no.
No way, her mom said no.
But that's just, you know, she's a, you know, traditionalist, you know. She's probably was thinking with her brain and not her heart like everybody else was.
Yeah.
But she's fine.
Like why'd she say no?
I think it's just because we're so young. Yeah, yeah. She was so young. I mean, we haven't had any life experience or anything like that. We're literally wanted to get married.
Really?
Yeah.
So you graduate high school, and what was your next step other than getting engaged? What were you trying to do with your life? What did you want to do?
So I knew when I was a senior that I wanted to be a police officer.
Really?
Yeah. And I knew I wanted to go into the military as well.
What was the draw to law enforcement?
I'm going to tell a really dumb story.
It's okay.
No, it's not. No. So when I was super little, and it's this desire, it's desire to help people in their time of need, I think. I always said, even before I was a police officer, like I would love to be there for somebody. And like even on their deathbed. And if I could lead them in prayer or be there for them, that's what I want to do. I could have easily gone like the medic route because that's probably more realistic, or the male ER nurse. But I always felt like the protection aspect, and that came from my father and watching Rambo growing up. Watching Rambo. Yeah, he let me watch Rambo a little too soon. Yeah, but
best movies, dude.
Yeah,
those and Rocky.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So, yeah. So whenever this is, I don't even know why I'm saying this. This is dumb. Whenever I was young, I think they may call me in for a psychological evaluation after I tell you the story.
It's okay.
When I was young,
I'll vouch for you.
I remember this vividly. I was like 5 or 6 years old. I was sitting in the house, right, watching Rambo. I don't know if I was watching Rambo, but. Watching TV, and I felt like I had to go outside and rescue something. And so I went outside, and I found this rabbit that had just been killed.
By what?
I don't know, man. It's been haunting me till this day.
No way.
And I was, okay, this is weird, but I was like, you know what? I want to help people.
No way.
From the youngest age of like, I've wanted to be there for people. And like, but on the Rambo warrior side, I've always wanted to carry a gun. I mean, I know it sounds childish back then. That's like, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to carry a gun, you know, I wanted to protect people. And so it was like, if I could have been there for that rabbit, that wouldn't have happened.
Was that something that your dad like kind of instilled?
Sorry, actually, we're trying to be serious.
No, was that something that your dad like instilled in you? Did your dad have like that like protector type role? Like, was it? Obviously, you didn't know a lot of the things that he did, especially at that age. But I'm guessing he kind of portrayed that by the type of person that he was.
I think. Well, it's just his. He was the epitome of a man. Like everything he did was manly, right?
Really.
But he never. The protector type thing, like we had a couple shotguns in the house and a couple revolvers. Like he took me shooting a few times. I learned to shoot mainly from my brother-in-law, my oldest sister's husband.
Really?
He's the one that took me out shooting the most. He brought me my first gun through a straw purchase. Just kidding. He didn't know. Just kidding.
It's Missouri, dude. You can gift guns.
Yeah, yeah. He gifted me an SKS. Then $200 randomly fell in his pocket. No. But I credit him to taking me out the most to like to a place called Busick near Springfield. And I learned how to shoot that way.
What did he do?
He is a producer slash he does a manager at a show in Branson.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Grand Country Music Country Jubilee, I believe. He's an awesome dude.
I've never been to Branson.
Well, aren't you going here pretty soon?
Oh, yeah. I forgot. Yeah, I am, actually.
There you go. I got you. Yeah. I got you, boo.
Yeah, dude, I'm going to get hooked up. This
yeah.
is a gold treatment.
You wanna, Branson, yeah, you want to go to a show? I got tickets.
Yeah, dude, we're going.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, my dad never openly portrayed like, hey, let's be a protector. It was just by his actions, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what instilled in me, like John Maxwell talks about it in one of his books. I think it's 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. There was a study that was done with a business, and it gave like six different categories of leadership qualities, and leads by example was the number one thing. And I've taken that to heart before I read that, you know. But it's always because I've had him as an example of how to act as a man and the balance of that. Like just recently, after I got off the phone with Dick Thompson, we were taking one of his cows to get eggs extracted. It was awesome to watch. But we had a conversation on the way back, and he was struggling with reconnecting with Dick.
Really?
Because of everything that happened over there. I feel like my nose is running. And it was, he said it was, he spent 50 years trying to forget about it.
Oh, dude.
It broke my heart.
Yeah.
And I think that's why he never like, he, you know, he went to be a farmer. He found the solace and the comfort and the warmth.
Dude, this is like the best war movie ever. It's like, this is what happens.
But yeah.
Now he just has to go back to war.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Don't piss him off too much.
Yeah. 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 This is like,
I won't put a name on that. Yeah. You know what I mean? But
dude, I was just about to ask you though, is like, did hearing all the stuff that he did over there, did it change the way that you perceived him?
No.
It could be for the better or for the worse.
No, I think I said it, like him leading by example my whole life. The thing is, it didn't change anything about perception. It actually just made me more, not more proud even. I don't know if I could be more proud. I validated maybe. Like, see, I already knew what you did was bad, but that's cool. Like actually hearing a story from somebody else about my dad. Yeah. And then having that dude's like, hey, your dad's a hero. A guy that I've, that's been on the Jocko podcast four times, you know, like,
no way.
I don't know if anybody's ever been on four times, but you know, just a guy like that, saying that your dad's a hero is, that was more legitimate than anything.
That's so awesome. Yeah. What's up guys? Thanks for hanging in there for this week's episode. As you can tell, there's more from this guest, and here's a sneak peek from next week's episode.
So the guy, we get outside and we have to go in formation. It's not just a gaggle. We stand there in formation, take out our smart books and read them. Well, there's a guy next to me who forgot our smart book in the barracks and nobody caught it yet. Yeah.
You gave him your smart book, you dummy.
No, yeah. I didn't give him my smart book. Screw that. So we're standing there. I'm reading it, whatever, or trying not to fall asleep or something. And so he's just standing there at the position of attention or a parade rest or whatever. And the drill sergeant, you know, he's lollygagging, not doing anything. He's sitting on, like, the railing, and he's just, like, looking around. All of a sudden, he hones in on this guy next to me, not having his smart book open, right? He comes over, like, he freaking walks, you know, speed walks over. He's like, "Where's your smart book, Private?" And I'm like, "Oh, God, I'm so glad he's not yelling at me." He's like, "Private, take out your hands and act like you're reading your smart book." So he takes out his hands, and he's, like, reading a smart book. So the drill sergeant goes away. And about 30 seconds later, he's like, "Private, what are you reading out of your smart book?" Out of his fake smart book. His imaginary smart book. And he's like, "My general order is drill sergeant." He's like, "What's your second general order?" And he goes, "Duh, duh, And I point at his fake smart book. And I go, "It's right there. Just read it."
The 1078 Project podcast is proudly sponsored by Deemed Fit. Deemed Fit is an activewear and a leisure company created for first responders. Be a part of their movement to instill confidence, motivation, and a willingness to keep pushing forward. Deemed Fit is a first responder-owned company looking to help first responders and their friends stay as physically and mentally fit as possible. Stay Deemed Fit.